listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Tensions on the Korean Peninsula were at the center of the discussion at the United Nations Security Council Friday. This was the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, opening the special high-level session.
Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. President, allow me to first thank Japan and thank you personally for convening this meeting. I'd also like to acknowledge and welcome the many ministers and other representatives around this table, as well as the participation of the Republic of Korea and the Democratic People's Republic of Korea in this important meeting. The situation on the Korean Peninsula is the most tense and dangerous peace and security issue in the world today. I'm deeply concerned by the risk of military confrontation, including as a result of unintended escalation or miscalculation. I know that the Undersecretary General for Political Affairs briefed the Security Council earlier this week on his recent visit to the DPRK. I will not repeat what he said, but I want to note it was the first in-depth political exchange of views between the United Nations Secretariat and officials in Pyongyang in almost 8 years. And his visit came indeed at the end of a difficult period. In 2017, the DPRK conducted activities related to its nuclear and ballistic missile programs at an alarming and accelerated pace. On September the 3rd, it concluded its sixth nuclear explosive test, involved what its claim was, and I quote, a two-stage thermonuclear weapon, end of quote. This test caused a seismic event of magnitude 6.1. Over the year, the DPRK conducted 20 ballistic missile launches. This has included its first tests of two intercontinental range ballistic missiles, as well as tests of new medium and intermediate range ballistic missiles. In September, two Hwasong-12 intermediate range ballistic missiles overflew Japan. No aviation or maritime safety notifications were given for any of these launches. The International Atomic Energy Agency remains unable to access the DPRK to verify the status of its nuclear program. The agency monitors developments through satellite imagery. At the Yongbyon Nuclear Scientific Research Center, it has observed signatures consistent with the operation of the plutonium production reactor and reported centrifuge enrichment facility. The agency also continues to observe indications of ongoing mining, milling, and concentration activities at the Pyongsan uranium mine and Pyongsan uranium concentration plant. The DPRK remains the only country to continue to break the norm against nuclear testing. Its actions show blatant disregard for the will and resolutions of the Security Council and undermine the international norm against nuclear testing and the nuclear non-proliferation regime. Security Council Resolution 2375, adopted in September, includes the strongest sanctions ever imposed on the DPRK. I reiterate my call on the DPRK leadership to comply with the relevant Security Council resolutions and allow space for the resumption of dialogue on denuclearization and sustainable peace on the Korean Peninsula. While all concerned seek to avoid an accidental escalation leading to conflict, the risk is being multiplied by misplaced overconfidence, dangerous narratives and rhetoric, and the lack of communication channels. It is time to re-establish and strengthen communication channels, including inter-Korean and military-to-military channels. This is critical to lower the risk of miscalculation or misunderstanding and reduce tensions in the region. Any military action could have devastating and unpredictable consequences. The unity of the Security Council is an essential instrument to achieve the goal of denuclearization and creates the space for diplomatic initiatives aimed at achieving it in a peaceful manner. The Security Council's call in Resolution 2375 is united, and I quote, to further work to reduce tensions so as to advance the prospects for a comprehensive settlement. And then, expressing its desire for a peaceful and diplomatic solution to the situation, and I go on quoting, welcoming efforts by Council members as well as other member states to facilitate a peaceful and comprehensive solutions through dialogue. The Secretariat and I are your partner in this effort, and my good offices remain always available. I believe the United Nations Secretariat adds strategic value in three key areas. First, impartiality. Second, the voice, norms, values, and principles for peaceful and diplomatic solutions in line with international law. And third, offering channels of communication with all parties. The organization is a key venue where all six parties are represented and can interact to narrow differences in understanding and promote confidence-building measures. As Secretary General, I commit to protecting and strengthening these three areas. Security Council unity behind this effort is essential. Mr. President, I welcome the Council's humanitarian and human rights concerns. The Secretariat has consistently conveyed the importance of disassociating the peace and security situation from humanitarian imperatives. 70% of the population of the DPRK is categorized as food insecure, and 40% are malnourished. The 2017 DPRK Humanitarian Needs and Priorities document calls for $114 million to meet urgent requirements. This is only 30% funded. I ask all member states, particularly those around this table, to carefully consider the humanitarian principles that underpin our work. The people of the DPRK need generosity and help. Mr. President, Excellencies, not long from now, athletes will gather in Pyeongchang for the Winter Olympics. I express my sincerest hope that the DPRK will take part. As the General Assembly has recognized, these games can foster an atmosphere of peace, development, tolerance, and understanding on the Korean Peninsula and beyond. We need to spread and deepen that spirit of hope and possibility. Diplomatic engagement is the only pathway to sustainable peace and denuclearization. We must do everything we can to reach that objective and avoid the level of danger that would be unpredictable in its trajectory and catastrophic in its consequences. Thank you.
The Vice Minister for Foreign Affairs of the Republic of Korea or South Korea addressed some of the concerns raised by the other members of the Security Council.
Mr. President, thank you very much for convening this meeting and the opportunity to speak to the Council. I also thank the Secretary General for his briefing. Let me start by rewinding the clock to December 2016. The Council had adopted resolutions 2270 and 2321 in response to North Korea's fourth and fifth nuclear tests, with the hope that this would change the behavior of North Korea. However, fast forwarding to December 2017, the situations have further deteriorated. North Korea conducted yet another nuclear test and launched 20 ballistic missiles this year. To be fair, the international community responded by further strengthening and implementing the Security Council resolutions, while not losing sight of the efforts to resume dialogues. These endeavors, however, have not been enough to bring North Korea back to the negotiation table for denuclearization. Mr. President, just over a couple of weeks ago, North Korea launched its most advanced ballistic missile with intercontinental range. North Korea claimed afterwards to have achieved the completion of its state nuclear force. Amid diverging assessment, what is certain is that North Korea is indeed in the final stages of nuclear weaponization. If completed, it will fundamentally alter the security landscape in the region and beyond. Many commentators point out that it will aggravate tension in the already heavily militarized region and even worry about the risk of nuclear proliferation to rogue states and non-state actors. North Korea also threatens to shatter the foundation of international non-proliferation regimes and continues to inflict lasting harm on its own people. The international community, now more so than ever, must grasp the gravity and urgency of the North Korean threat and find ways to halt its nuclear program and bring it back to the path of denuclearization. Mr. President, what matters more now is not a mere assessment of the North Korean threat, but rather our united will and firm action against this regime. North Korea is fiercely waging a battle of wills against the international community. It wants to be recognized as a nuclear weapon state on its own terms and conditions. Our answer should be absolutely no. We should not be coerced by North Korea's continuing provocations, but rather uphold our principles while firmly responding to its reckless behaviors. At the same time, we should not be provoked into conflict, nor should we shut the doors of dialogue and peace. Our common goal is the complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization of North Korea in a peaceful manner. In this context, I would like to underscore that 2018 Pyeongchang Winter Olympic Games should be an Olympic for peace. My government urges North Korea to join the Olympic Games and to seize this opportunity for dialogues. North Korea is also waging a battle of actions against the international community. Time and again, North Korea has found and taken advantage of the loopholes in the Council resolutions. North Korea has preyed on the weak links of the international community. The sanctions are not an end in themselves and are not meant to bring down North Korea, but to bring it to the negotiation table for denuclearization. However, we are to bring the unwilling North Korea back to the table. We must fill in all gaps identified in the implementation of the resolutions. In this regard, we deeply appreciate the active efforts of the 1718 Committee. The international community has made some progress, including the restriction on oil supply, the export ban on North Korea's key products, and the prohibition of overseas work authorization. Many countries, even those with long-standing relationship with North Korea, have joined these efforts, including through the expulsion of individuals on the sanctions list. The record high number of submissions of implementation of reports for resolutions 2270 and 2321 is a testimony to the enhanced awareness of the international community regarding the North Korean threat. However, in our race against North Korea, we need to do more, way more. North Korea's evasive tactics are becoming more sophisticated, and this regime continues to exploit all weak links. In fact, the Republic of Korea has been actively cooperating with its partners to identify and stop North Korea's attempts to evade sanctions and seek alternative routes to sell coal and other banned products and to illegally import oil. Let me emphasize that none of us should become that weak link, and that none of us should condone groups and individuals who assist North Korea's defiance against this council. In this regard, sharing best practices against North Korea's evasive tactics would be helpful in closing the loopholes. Mr. President, I began my remarks by recalling how we ended the year 2016 and how North Korea defiantly continued its series of provocations in 2017. We cannot afford to sit again at the end of 2018 and feel as if it were a deja vu of 2017, regretting our business as usual approach. The Council members and the international community must redouble their efforts to ensure a seamless and complete implementation of the sanctions and apply as much pressure as necessary until North Korea returns to the negotiation table with a sincere willingness for denuclearization. With a sense of urgency, we should make North Korea perceive without a doubt that it will pay heavily for its provocations, that it will never be accepted as a nuclear weapon state, and that dialogue for denuclearization is the only viable option. The Republic of Korea reaffirms its solid commitment to achieve the denuclearization of North Korea and the establishment of permanent peace on the Korean Peninsula. We will work closely with all countries to this end. Thank you.
The comments by the Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs of South Korea were followed by comments from his colleague in the DPRK, or North Korea.
Mr. President, at the outset, I condemn Japan in my strongest possible terms, who is holding presidency of the UN Security Council during December this year, and instigated by the United States, is now making as able use of its opportunity by convening the ministerial briefings of UN Security Council on non-proliferation issue of the DPRK. I have to mention about that the meeting today is none other than a desperate measure plotted by the US, being terrified by the incredible might of our republic that has successfully achieved the great historic cause of completing the state nuclear force, cause of building of a rocket power through a great November event. I believe that if non-proliferation issue is to be discussed, the first countries to be brought before the Court of Justice at the U.S., who is the kingpin of virtual and horizontal proliferation, popping astronomical almost of funds into the modernization of nuclear weapons and hindering in every way the denuclearization of the Middle East and Japan, who keeps more than necessary stockpile of plutonium and seeks every opportunity to produce nuclear weapons. Our possession of nuclear weapons was an individual self-defensive measure of defending our sovereignty and rights of existence and development from the U.S. nuclear threat and blackmail, and if anyone is to blame for it, the U.S. is the one who must be held accountable. There are several nuclear power states over the world now, but there is no country like the U.S. who is continuing to openly threat and blackmail other countries with its nuclear weapons. We could easily draw to the answer of this case only being noted now much amount of money of the U.S. is running through for the maintenance and modernization of its nuclear weapons. It is already well known to the outside that the U.S. has now stockpiled more than 4,000 nuclear warheads in its nuclear arsenals, deploying over 115 technical nuclear bombs over the territory of its NATO allies, and is now planning to consume up around $1 trillion for its nuclear weapons, maintenance and modernization during 30 years in future. All of the figures above clearly prove that the U.S. is only the ringleader in nuclear proliferation. It is also disturbing to see the UN Security Council acting like a tool of the U.S. and playing to its turn instead of keeping impartiality as the lifeline in its activities through to its mission to pressure international peace and security. It is the UN Security Council of today that, while ignoring our repeated request to bring the issue of the provocated and aggressive joint military exercise on the table of the Council, the most graphic manifestation of nuclear threat and blackmail of the U.S. keeps itself busy knowing toying to the U.S. that assessed sanctions and pressure against us by condemning our self-defense defensive measures. The DPRK, at every time when the U.S.-South Korean joint military exercise that threatening seriously the peace and the security of the South Korean Peninsula is a region and the world are waged, submitted the letters to the Security Council for 11 times from the year 2015, requesting to raise the issue and discuss it emergently at the Council. However, on the contrary, turning away its face at every time of our request for such aggressive joint military exercise to the last, the UN Security Council has adopted 11 sanction resolutions against my country, denouncing our self-defensive measures as of a threat to international peace and security. With all the above mentioned fact, we could easily prove unfairness, double standard, and party prejudice of the Security Council. As we have clarified in the government statement, the development and advancement of the strategic weapons of the DPRK are entirely to defend the sovereignty and the territorial integrity of the country from the U.S. nuclear blackmail policy and the nuclear threat, and to ensure the peaceful life of the people, and therefore we would not pose any threat to any country and region as long as the interests of the DPRK are not infringing upon. Reiterating once again, our nuclear force is served thoroughly for each mission as self-defensive deterrent, and it is fully accord to the Rule 51 of the UN Charter stipulating the right of existence exercise of self-defense measures to be made by individual UN member states. The DPRK is in accordance with the decree of the Supreme People's Assembly adopted on 1 April 2013, has established abolished perfect system and order of stockpiling and maintaining the fully guarantee any kind of illegal transfer of nuclear weapons, its technology and weapon-grade nuclear materials. As of the result, there is no single case being raised about our nuclear proliferation up to the moment. All of the data of impurity related with my country's proliferation scattered by hostile forces are totally groundless plot intending to defame the dignity of the DPRK, the powerful nuclear state, and nothing but the only violation behavior of intervention by picking up the issue of strengthening of our national defensive measures. The possession of the nuclear by the DPRK could not be the violation of any international law and regulation in any case, for the DPRK had withdrawn from the NPT in a most justified way. At the same time, it is clear to everybody that the DPRK does not inform any interest of other countries, and the purpose of possession of nuclear deterrent is only for self-defensive and to safeguard the peace of the region. The DPRK, whatever What stage will march forward and make great advancement victoriously as world most powerful nuclear and military state, upholding the line on simultaneously development of the two fronts. In accordance hereby, I reaffirm once again that the DPRK as a responsible nuclear power and a peace-loving state will sincerely fulfill its non-proliferation obligation assumed before the international society and put its every effort to achieve the noble cause of safeguarding world peace and security. Thank you.
Those remarks by John Song-nam, the DPRK's permanent representative to the UN, were greeted with the following comments from U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson.
First, I think we have heard all of these things before from this government. There is no doubt that the DPRK's pursuit of a nuclear arsenal is in clear violation of international law, directly challenges the global nonproliferation regime, and greatly threatens international peace and security. This body has unanimously made these points for well over a decade now. The international community condemns North Korea's pursuit of a nuclear arsenal, and we will never accept a nuclear North Korea. The DPRK's unlawful acts cannot be ignored, nor can they be explained away. The DPRK must be held accountable for its actions. And in that regard, any notion that the source of tensions on the peninsula are the fault of no one party, there is but one party that has carried out illegal detonation of nuclear devices. There is but one party that continues to launch intercontinental ballistic missiles in violation of UN Security Council resolutions, overflying another sovereign nation, Japan, threatening civil aviation security because these launches are undertaken with no notification. There is but one party that has been targeted with punishment and penalties through the most vigorous regime sanction ever enacted, and that is the Kim regime in North Korea. They alone are responsible for these tensions. They alone must take responsibility for these tensions, and they alone can solve these tensions.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. What was Russiagate is now quickly becoming FBIgate. Who will investigate the investigators? Also, does the U.S. have a real North Korea policy? And the end of net neutrality and the start of internet apartheid. Crosstalking FBIgate, I'm joined by my guest, Alexander Mercuris. He is a writer on legal affairs as well as the editor-in-chief of TheDuran.com. We also have Victor Olevich. He is a political analyst as well as a leading expert at the Center for Actual Politics. And, of course, we have Dmitry Bobich. He is a political analyst with Sputnik International. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Alex, you're joining us here, visiting Moscow, and you have a great legal mind, as we all know. I think it's fair to say this is FBIgate, because there never really was a Russia scandal. I mean, after, what, 18 months, not a shred of evidence, but we have day after day after day, enormous amount of collusion, bias, inside the DOJ, inside the FBI.
I think that's absolutely right. They found absolutely nothing after 18 months of investigation of collusion between Russians and the Trump campaign. But what we're discovering is that the Trump campaign was being surveyed, that people were being watched, that their emails were being read, and that there was extreme bias within the FBI, with the senior investigator of the FBI now exposed to have been sending extremely anti-Trump emails with his lover, who's also an official of the FBI.
And Peter Strzok, right?
Indeed, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And having discussions about it in the office of the deputy director of the FBI, Mr. McCabe, who was
referred to in the emails as Andy.
Andy, exactly.
Victor, I've said this before on this program. If people on WhatsApp, on their social media, if they want to say the President of the United States or candidate for the United States presidency, Trump, he's an idiot, that's fine with me. That's a personal opinion. But when you start talking about an insurance policy, that's when I start getting concerned, because these are unelected officials meddling in the election. And these people are supposed to be apolitical, at least nominally.
Peter, it is really high time for a new church commission to be instituted to investigate the crimes committed and the
violations. Remind our viewers what the church commission was all about.
The church commission was a commission that existed in the 70s after the Watergate crisis. It was obvious that during Watergate and long before it, the FBI and other special services conducted operations on U.S. territory against U.S. citizens that were illegal, that were unlawful, and there was widespread feeling of distrust towards FBI, CIA, and other special services, and the church committee was set to investigate those crimes and set new standards for oversight and for preventing, to make sure that more violations are not happening.
No more abuses of power.
And today we see, as you correctly pointed out, we see major violations by FBI, by the CIA, of U.S. law. We also see how they almost directly intervene into the political process in the United States. They intervene so directly that it's almost unbelievable.
Yeah. It's breathtaking. Dima, I mean, again, one can have their personal tastes and attitudes, okay? And I think that's fair game. Okay, everyone has an opinion here. But when they bring it into the office, we have this case of Bruce Orr, his wife, a high official in the FBI. His wife is working at Fusion GPS, where all of this started from this salacious dossier, and his wife was over there?
Yes.
And that's not disclosed to the public? He didn't even tell his boss at the FBI that he had meetings with Christopher Steele. I mean, if that isn't collusion, then we have to find another word, because this is just outrageous.
You're absolutely right, but actually, if we look at this whole presidential election, why is no one investigating the cases when Obama quite publicly said, this guy, Trump, will not be elected the president of the United States? I assure you. He said it to G7 leaders. Mm. Wasn't that interference into an election by the acting president? But talking about the FBI, obviously FBI, when they interrogated Flynn, they had the transcript of his conversation with the Russian ambassador, Sergei Kislyak. So what they did was really ugly. They caught him on deviations. Obviously, he did not record his conversation. He did not remember it.
Because he was on vacation. Who knows? He was probably on the beach drinking a pina colada, and he didn't take any notes, okay?
Absolutely. And
well, he does say something about his qualifications. Yes. For a former
head
of the Defense Intelligence Agency to get into that situation, it does say something about his qualifications. But I'm sorry to interrupt. Mm-hmm. The very fact that the American media openly discusses the deep state, and the American president also writes about it on his Twitter, it already calls for an investigation of the role of the U.S. security services.
Basically, if we look at the situation when Michael Flynn pleaded guilty for lying to
FBI.
Well, it all reminds me of Stalinist logic. Andrei Vyshinsky, Stalin's star prosecutor during the Shoal trials, he said that confession is the queen of proof, the queen of evidence. Mm. So what we have here is all the ultra-liberal media in the U.S., just buoyed, by this him pleading guilty. That is Vyshinsky's logic.
Yes.
He pleaded guilty, he's guilty.
It has nothing to do with justice, because, and I don't want to waste all our time on this, but if you go through the Hillary email scandal, how many people lied to the FBI and are not held to it? Alex, the thing that's really interesting is that so much of what we're learning happened before the election. And I have the impression that all these high FBI officials, they were so confident that Trump would win, that they became very complacent, you know, bringing their bias right into the office, into Andy's office, okay? Because they could not conceive it that the American people would choose differently. And then, well, and I'm sure there's still, with this Peter Strzok character, apparently there's a lot more messages to read.
Well, this is it. There was an intelligence agency or intelligence community which interfered in the U.S. election. It was not the Russian intelligence community. It was the intelligence community of the United States. And then when the wrong result came, they had to somehow conceal that. So they intensified their interference. We have more surveillance of the Trump transition team. We have the entrapment, because I have no hesitation in calling it that, of Michael Flynn.
Right.
We have this whole investigation that's been launched with Special Counsel Mueller.
It's really interesting. Yeah. Victor, that Michael Morell, the former acting director of the CIA, came out and told Susan Glasser over at Politico, essentially admitting that there was a cabal, and how they dealt with the election of President Trump. And he's very transparent. I mean, this is the highest ranking CIA official to come out and talk about this. And he, I think he made a big mistake. He showed his bias before the election, okay? He which was remarkable for so many people.
He wrote that piece for the New York Times, very open. He is generally somebody who is pretty open about what he thinks, especially for an intelligence officer. I remind you that he is the one that spoke on Charlie Rose's show that no longer exists for known reasons, that Russians should be killed secretly for what Russia is doing in Syria or for fighting ISIS. Yes, it's not surprising that he is so open about it. But the thing is that they are not quitting. The intelligence community is going on with this. Well, they are not about to quit, and they really want to unseat the president of the United States.
Gentlemen, all three of you, this is turning into a constitutional crisis.
Yes.
I think it is a constitutional crisis and a very profound one. The biggest the United States has faced, certainly in its modern history.
In January, we had a program, if I remember correctly, titled Coup d'Etat.
Yes.
And essentially, I think, Victor, something you said that I think you're absolutely right, but it's very disturbing. They can't reverse this. And I said in my introduction, who will investigate the investigators? Mm. Does Congress have the guts to step up and perform their constitutional role? I don't think they do.
I don't think so neither, because Congress has just passed an act which allows the United States to interfere into private affairs of Russian citizens. They passed an act that requires the U.S. government and Trump to make reports on the business deals, on the connections between the Russian businessmen and President Putin, between the high-placed Russian officials and their relatives or their acquaintances abroad. You know, a whole report on their property abroad, relatives.
You know what I find so laughable about that, Dima?
And you expect this Congress to investigate?
Let me go to Alexander. You know what I find laughable about that? Is that are congressmen going to be made to list what lobbyists they meet every single day? How much money they take from them? There's no accountability when it comes to lobbying here. There was foreign countries interfering in the American election. It wasn't Russia.
We know who it was. Exactly. But, I mean, there is not going to be any of that sort of accountability, nor, I think, in the end, will there be anything like the Church Commission that you were talking about, the Victor was talking about.
You know what that
precisely
is,
because it's so dangerous. I mean, it would be
so I don't know what's going to happen here, gentlemen, because public confidence is eroding very, very quickly. Yeah. I mean, I came across a poll a few hours ago. 54% of Americans don't trust the special prosecutor right now because of perceived conflicts of interest. They're not perceived, they're very real. Go ahead, Victor.
And basically, the paradox of this is that the more they try to stitch this together, the less they can do it, because the more people get thrown into these scandals, the more problems there are for the American political establishment. So it's a situation where whatever step they take next it's going to be even worse. And with the coup d'etat, you know, we can actually expect one next year through semi-constitutional means, like possibly forcing Trump to. I'm sure there is going to be an attempt to force him to resign without a full-blown impeachment process.
Okay, so the amendment, the 25th Amendment. Okay, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR.
Okay, before we switch gears to net neutrality, Dimi, you wanted to finish up on what I'm calling FBI gate.
Well, you ask me if I expect an investigation of what's going on. Well, in the near future, no. Why? Because the United States is, in fact, ruled by the ultra-liberal, neoliberal ideology. And you expect this ideology to investigate itself? Well, there were cases in history when totalitarian regimes had, their past misdeed investigated, like under Khrushchev or after Mao died in China. But for that to happen, you have to have real casualties inside the elite, so that part of the elite would like to investigate it. That has not yet happened.
It hasn't happened yet, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, people like to use the phrase low-lying fruit, but we have really high-ranking people. Are they going to sacrifice one? Is Bruce Orr, maybe? Does Peter Strzok? Are they going to get rid of somebody here to be the fall guy for all this? Because if they're not careful, the whole thing is going to collapse. Mm. Okay?
What is awful is that no one is immune. Jared Kushner might be a Jew and a lobbyist for Israel, but he's also not immune. So they're taking everyone in their crosshairs, and that's a situation that no elite
likes.
Well,
then it looks like it's going to be a mutually assured slaughter.
Absolutely. Okay? And that's where it's going.
In Russia, when was Beria arrested? When the guys in the Politburo simply got tired of fearing him, you know. Mm-hmm. They were all under constant threat, so they decided to terminate the situation. Yeah. But I'm not sure that the United States is at this point.
That's also what happened when McCarthy, when did it stop? Because he got to the army, he started to accuse generals, and that was enough. Yes. Enough was enough, and that's when the McCarthyism era basically ended. But we are still far away from that
here.
Okay, let's change gears, gentlemen. Net neutrality. How big of a story is this here coming from the FCC? Because I think it's been underreported, and I look at across the U.S., and people say this is a Republican gambit. There's a lot of red states that don't want to see their internet fiddled with here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the United States and the West, they like to think of themselves as democratic. The only thing that's democratic now is access to the internet. That's in danger.
I think that's exactly right. I think this is a huge story because the internet is now becoming increasingly the vehicle people are turning to get their news. They're not taking it from the mainstream, the old traditional media. So the way this net neutrality could work is that we could see the invasion into the one remaining free space of the apparatus that is now controlling the rest of the media, the ideology that Dimitri was talking about. So I think this is a huge story. I don't think there's any understanding of it amongst most people. I don't see
it's Russia. I mean, look at the cable stations in the U.S. Yes. I mean, with the exception of Fox, this was very, very much underreported. Yes. I mean, you had Rachel Maddow saying it's important. This is significant, but nobody on the left wanted to go there and talk about why it is.
Look, it was only a matter of time when the freedom in internet space would end. Really, remember the 90s. I was in school back then. The internet was just starting. You remember the boards and how it progressed to what we have now with the World Wide Web. And it was a new medium where at first you could do some things, then you could do more. Now you can do a lot. Now people, 20 years ago, there was limited news coverage there. Now everybody is there, even more so to some degree than in the print media. So now, of course, everyone understands the elites, the American elites, the Western elites understand that either they take control of the internet, either they limit the access of their populations to news that they do not like, to information that they do not like, or they will start...
You're going to get that endless... trying to download the video over
exactly.
And over
exactly.
And
they also know, yes, some people will use you know, Darknet and other, you know, sources to get more information. But they also know that most people are not going to go that far, because only a few people take so much time and effort to get that information. Most people, oh, you don't have access, that site no longer shows up.
We have Twitter now limiting expression. We have Facebook. I know that personally. Okay, Google, and now we have this. But it's. I always look at these things, you know, do people think about the ultimate consequences, because they're destroying the Internet. To take control of it, they're willing to destroy it.
Well, first they destroyed the traditional media, now they destroy Internet. It's quite logical. It's the way all totalitarian regimes evolve. But actually, you know, when I read the traditional media, I am a subscriber to New York Times newsletter. And when, like, the main news is cases of unwanted kissing at the top. I thought they would include Leonid Brezhnev there. I was looking for his name, you know. But, okay, if the traditional media is busy with this stuff, then it's only natural that people turn to Internet, which is a modern version of a rumor mill sometimes. Yeah. Well, it's natural that people believe in rumors when they distrust or have reasons to distrust the traditional media. Mm-hmm. So what we see is a major epic fail of the traditional media that makes people turn to Internet, and then the state clamps down on Internet saying that we want it to be neutral, which means not critical of us.
No, what they want to do is they want to make sure everybody watches CNN, MSNBC, sees the Washington Post, sees the New York Times, and makes us invisible and broadcast.
They want to make sure that the Internet looks like the American mainstream media.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's why they're so mad at RT and Sputnik, because they're not rumor mills. We only report confirmed facts. So they cannot accuse us of being a rumor mill, and that's why they accuse us of being propaganda tools, and that's why they clamp down so hard on RT, simply because they want to say it's either mainstream media or it's just rumors.
Okay, gentlemen, I'm going to switch gears here. North Korea keeps popping up into the news here. Is this all about the future resume, I would say, of the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, because again, the White House has pulled the rug from under his feet. He was saying that the U.S. was open to negotiations with the North Koreans, which they should. That would be the logical thing to do, without preconditions. And then it's pulled back. He's humiliated again. Is this more about Tillerson than it is about North Korea?
What is beginning to wonder, because a diplomat, which is what Mr. Tillerson is supposed to be, is there to talk and to talk to the other side. And this is the obvious thing to do. And yet he has been criticized for saying this. And one has to wonder whether there's any real interest in the United States in actually settling the North Korean issue.
But what does this send to the North Koreans? What does this send to the region, okay? I think this is talk about destabilizing here.
Well, if we're talking about North Korea, what it says to them is that this is not, nobody wants to talk to us. They want to threaten us instead, because we're getting all these threatening sounds out of the United States. And the one person who is talking about negotiation seems to be in political trouble. So increase the accelerate your nuclear program, accelerate your ballistic missile program, because negotiations are becoming
impossible.
But
at the same time, we had the Secretary of State Mattis. He kind of pushed back on how threatening the North Korean missile program is.
Mm. Look, Trump's approach to North Korea is is not constructive at all.
No.
And there are, whatever way he takes from now is going to make the situation even worse. If he keeps on making direct threats against North Korea and against its leader, and not acting on them, then the
paper,
United States is going to look more and more like a paper tiger, not just in the eyes of Pyongyang, but in the eyes of the entire Asian-Pacific region, and in the eyes of the entire international community, including American allies in the region, Japan, South Korea, others. Now, if Trump actually attempts military aggression against North Korea, this is going to lead to a regional geopolitical catastrophe with mass casualties in South Korea, in Japan, in North Korea, possibly in other countries.
Possibly even in Russia.
Let's hope none of this happens.
Sure.
And mass casualties among American personnel and civilians living in South Korea. I'll remind you that there are more than 20,000 American soldiers and officers stationed in South Korea, plus many more civilians with U.S. Passports that live in South Korea, many of them in Seoul, that would be destroyed.
Yes.
Destroyed on the first day. On the first day of such action. So Tillerson, of course, as somebody who at least espouses classical American foreign policy approaches, of course he can't agree to that. Just as he could not agree to recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital. So he will go. Next year he will leave.
You've been predicting this. We'll see if it's going to come true here. But I think this, we'll go back to ideology. Okay.
Yes.
The problem with the U.S. foreign policy approach here is that if you negotiate, it's deemed as appeasement. Mm-hmm. And this is they've screwed it up because this is not what diplomacy is. Diplomacy is I give a little bit and you give a little bit, yes, and we try to resolve
and
it.
And we talk.
And we talk. But this is the problem, is that if you negotiate, it's considered weakness and appeasement, yeah, and this is not the way it should work.
This is a more general problem of U.S. foreign policy. They can't talk to anyone anymore. No. It's just imposing sanctions.
Yeah.
Or threatening military action. Mm. George Bush Jr. was accused of sending F-16s instead of emails. But I feel nostalgic of him now because even he was less kind of belligerent in his policy. And if a
we're rapidly running out of time here, but the add to what Dima just said there is that do we have a commander-in-chief that's actually the commander-in-chief? See, this adds to another layer.
Well, this is the problem, because I don't think we do. I mean, we've got a commander-in-chief who is under political siege in Washington and who doesn't want to appear weak, because politically it is going to be very dangerous for him to appear weak, because, as Dima says, the United States in its foreign policy has no reverse gear. It cannot go back.
That's a very good phrase.
Whoever remembers the art of the deal... Well, it reminds me of the way people are driven to suicide.
Yeah.
Well, be serious. That's how people are driven to suicide. Be serious. Show us that you are serious about your intentions. But it's so extremely dangerous. And if the tragedy happens in Korea, don't say that only Trump is to blame. I'm sure that the liberal media would say it's just crazy Trump. No, Obama destroyed a lot of institutions. And he introduced this style of diplomacy.
Okay, Dima, we've run out of time here. Many thanks to my guests here in Moscow, and thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. This is the end of our broadcast segment. Stay with us for the extended version on our YouTube channel. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk Rules.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR, Community Public Radio. I'm your host, Don DeBar.